Gods be good. I'm starting to believe that Robert was the clever one.
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R. R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
And maybe he was. Maybe he was.
Yeah, maybe. You know who's the clever one here on the podcast? Two Champs and a Chump. I was going to say Mr. Daryl Lloyd.
Surprising that you would say me, but I'm going to say it was Mr. Will Lentz.
Oh, really? Sadly, neither of us said it was Mr. Kyle Vansel.
Well, only a fool would think of such a thing.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate that.
You're the lovable one.
Yeah, I'm the huggable one. I like that. I'll take it.
You're welcome. So welcome. Welcome to another fine. I mean, can I get some fries with that shake? Episode of Two Champs and a Chump. I'm Daryl.
Hi, Daryl.
For any listeners that are kind of confused about the introduction to this week's episode, we're trying to help Daryl make it to PAX as a press member. But evidently, if you're applying as a podcast, you must be introduced in the first 30 seconds of the podcast.
Yeah.
So all the important podcasts jump right into the introductions. Everyone knows this. It's in Podcasting 101.
I missed that day in class.
Yeah, every episode.
I think I was out sick.
Every episode of every podcast that is sent in for PAX review for a media badge, like a guy is actually at the beginning reading off his driver's license. He's like, yeah, my driver's license number is XS2004-5767. My name is Daryl Lloyd. I'm 5'10". 210 pounds. I'm working on losing weight. I have brown eyes, brown skin. I am a donor.
That's good of you, Daryl. Something to be proud of.
Yeah.
So, we're definitely going to link this episode and hope that they have patience for the remainder of the episodes.
Yeah, so if any of you have an in over at PAX, help Daryl out.
PAX East, to be precise. I am going regardless, but I am applying for a badge, and, you know, it looks pretty bleak, but we'll see, hopefully. I would like to have that badge. It would be cool.
It works for Gen Con, so maybe it'll work elsewhere. So, we are, however, a Game of Thrones podcast, and I think we've got some good content for you guys this week. There hasn't really been any terribly exciting news out of FFG lately, except for new league kits. Did you guys take a look at those?
Yes, we
did.
They're
not even league kits anymore. Now, they're tournament kits.
And they come with a big-ass box.
Yeah, what's up with that new card box? I was trying to figure that out. One of our listeners, I think, put out a pretty good idea that maybe they're just kind of a like a side-by-side box for two decks, like a Joust and a Melee next to each other, rather than the long ones that we've got now, which that might be kind of cool.
Yeah, I would like that. Or even just a side part for your tokens.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice. That's probably what I honestly would end up doing. I don't think a second deck would ever see that box.
Well, and that's what I could see, because if you think about it, you know, they have Star Wars, so why not use the same design? You know, one quote-unquote mold for all the games. So, yeah, you can put your tokens on one side, or if you play Star Wars, put your two decks in there.
Or Netrunner, for that matter.
Or Netrunner. That's correct, yeah. So, where you put your tokens, that's not my job to figure out, but you can put your two decks in there.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if they're made out of the same, you know, construction, the same cardboard and stuff, because I love the deck boxes I've already got. Like, I use those for a lot of nice uses, like, actually mainly for my non-Thrones card games, so I don't have to lug anything except decks around. But they're pretty handy. But some of them are starting to show some wear, you know? So I'm hoping these might be a little sturdier.
Yeah. You know, deck boxes are fine.
I gotta love swag. I'll take whatever they sent me.
You sounded pretty pumped about that, Danny.
Yeah, she's awfully majestic up there on her dragon. I don't know why it seems that FFG has this huge hard-on for Targmats these days, but...
I think Daenerys
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, well, Daenerys... dragons in the fantasy setting are highly marketable.
Right.
Daenerys is everyone's favorite character from the show. And I obviously say that generally speaking, because I am a Littlefinger man myself. But, you know, out in my job, I have customers who are like, oh, I love the Game of Thrones TV show. I love that there Daenerys. So, she's the most popular character, I think, nationwide. So,
more than Tyrion?
Yeah, I don't see any Dinklage on these mats. What's up with that?
I think the Tyrion from the books is a lot uglier than Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, all the art I've seen of Littlefinger, not all of it. There's some that's not bad, but 90% of it is a very unattractive man. And Peter Dinklage, you know, I gotta admit, the guy is a good-looking guy. He's a pretty good-looking guy, so, you know.
And they are just getting worse, as the one we had spoiled. They are just throwing him to the dogs, card-wise.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing to him. Oh, well. Anyways. I forgot what we were talking about.
Tournament kits. Cool books.
Yeah, tournament kits.
All the swag.
So, you know, I'm fairly happy. I'll be excited to see what the new boxes are like.
I think that they did they full art Betrayal at the Wall. Is that correct?
Yep, that's in, it looks like Mance, but I can't tell which
it is. Mance,
that is.
Yeah. I don't know.
I can't tell either.
I couldn't tell.
I'm gonna guess the agenda one.
That would make the most sense. I think he's most
that
relevant.
That one would see play.
Playing wise, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although the other one's not bad, but anyways. Betrayal at the Wall is kind of interesting that they would choose that plot.
Well, it's new and.
And well, they chose two wildlings, really. You know, that one, you have to be running a North agenda, and then Mance Raider.
I'm sensing a theme, considering this is the winter kit.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Mm.
And maybe with the TV show, you know. They've got Mance Raider, and then this coming season, maybe there's going to be a little more of that going on. I don't know. Marketing.
It's all about the marketing.
But I love Mance Raider, so I'll be happy to have that card. Betrayal at the Wall. I mean, I might as well have 11 plots in my Wildling deck.
You mean eight? You mean eight plots in your Wildling deck?
Eight. Why did I say 11? What game uses 10?
Aww.
Plots?
Is that 10?
Are you thinking of
that,
Star Wars objectives?
Is that 10 objectives in Star Wars? Okay. Yes. I've drank a fair amount.
There's also 10 stories in the story deck in Cthulhu.
Well, I'm sorry I can't, you know, get my games correct here. I meant eight.
Eight.
You know, I run 10 plots. Fuck you guys. Deal with it.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. Or 11, whatever. Anyways.
But no, that plot's money. I'm super glad to get it.
Mm-hmm.
decent, yeah.
It's so good. So good.
It's all right.
There's no... I mean, we're not going to get into this.
Yeah,
but
this is a discussion for another episode.
That's a discussion for another time.
Yeah. We'll rub it in your news come November.
We'll table that discussion possibly for next episode. Maybe we'll just make a grand list of cards that Daryl and Kyle disagree on.
Oh, please do.
I'm pretty sure you could just pull it up block by block, and there's some episodes.
I think you might be right.
There's definitely some cards this guy plays, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Winning. Cool. I'm winning lately, Daryl.
Well, when was the last time you won anything?
I top four at Worlds.
I don't remember that. I remember you having your Daenerys die when she shouldn't have died. That's what I remember.
Why? Why? God, the dreams are coming back.
That's right. Yeah, good luck getting some sleep tonight.
I wake in a cold sweat and calling you at 2 in the morning.
That's the worst part is, like, people watching, we can't say anything. We can't say anything. We're not allowed
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Daryl and I were right there together, and...
And we're just like...
God, bless America.
That's all right. That's all right. I too, have messed up while in the finals in Melee. Well, top 16. I killed a Myrcella whenever I had Power Blood revealed. Womp womp.
Nice.
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us.
And the worst of us, apparently.
No man is safe.
I'm definitely the worst. At that table, I was at one point in time. I remember saying, like, because these guys are trying to like make all these deals and be nice, whatever. I was like, bitch, this is the Game of Thrones, not the Game of Friends. And K-Tom said something like, well, you can't go around having everyone hate you. I was like, I made it to the top 16. I think we can.
You most certainly can.
Anyways, I might edit. I said that without saying bitch, because
yeah,
I do have enough respect for my fellow player to not call him a bitch.
To his face.
Yeah.
Key phrase. Those are the best kind of Melee decks, are the ones that piss everyone off and you still win.
Absolutely.
That's the key part, though. The still winning.
Still win.
Hey, I was doing good until I lost my Myrcella. And, you know, like, the 7 power that was on my Red Viper, but we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. So Daryl made a critical play mistake that cost him the game. He was doing great.
Boy.
Not a play mistake.
Isn't that how it always works?
I ran out wit, but I had to use it earlier. Like, or no, I didn't have any, Learned Crest characters. Anyways, we have an episode to get to, and let's not talk about the follies of Daryl in Melee.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not sure this really leaves me a great way to segue to the next topic, but you know what? We're going to do it anyway. We're just going to go ahead and move on to the restricted list. We were trying to figure out some topics and where to go here for our first episode of 2014. Daryl had suggested that we look at some of our predictions for 2014, so I turned that toward the restricted list because that's... seems to be a, shall we say, hot-button topic lately. So I drew up a little sample restricted list here, what I would like to see changed in the next update. Maybe I'll kind of read over that a little bit, let Kyle and Daryl weigh in on that. Maybe at the end, let them offer some counter-suggestions. And then I've got a more broad question about the restricted list to wrap up that discussion. And
all right.
I'll wait till Kyle gets back.
Good idea.
Okay. So here are the changes that I'm looking at making to the restricted list, okay? I'll let you guys kind of weigh in here in a moment. I'm going to go through each one here and mention a little bit about my reasoning on them. maybe do one or two, let you guys weigh in on each one, because a couple of them kind of connect to each other. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hell
so,
yeah.
Here's my first two. These kind of go together. I would like to see the Kings of Summer and the Kings of Winter come off the restricted list. People really don't play them a whole lot anymore anyway. And then now that we've also got the season's agendas on top of that, they've got the double whammy. I think maybe pulling them off the restricted list might be enough to get a few folks playing the seasonal stuff, breaking up some of the different agendas.
I think you'll barely see them, even if they're off the restricted list, just with the new seasons shitting so hard on them, but they definitely don't need to be on here anymore.
Yeah. I was going to say, In that case, then they for sure don't need to be on.
Well, it's hard to say, really, and the reason I say that is because, yes, the new season's agendas shit on them, but if you look at Song of Fire compared to Kings of Summer, it's not even close. Kings of Summer, every time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There are no decks right now that take advantage of Song of Ice in a legitimately arguable way as being better. And currently, I don't know if there will be any Song of Fire decks to arise that can be better than a Kings of Summer deck. The only thing I can think of that's better is just the fact that if the White Raven isn't in play, it cannot be Winter, which is okay at best. Do they belong on there still? It's tough to say, really, for me. It's tough. I don't know.
No way. Get them off there, because I think Song of Ice is... I think it's better than Kings of Winter. I just like the effect more, and so I think you'll still see it. And just knowing it's out there, I just can't see running Kings of Summer with so many things that can... Like, just if they running that agenda, I think, like, that's game.
Okay, now, I think that Kings of Winter and Kings of Summer... accompanied with the power of the King's Road is ridiculous. So Kings of Winter, obviously, they're going to take a card at random from your hand if you have more cards than them at the beginning of whatever, draw phase or the end of it, whatever. And then Kings of Summer are getting a card at the beginning of their turn, and they're going to get an extra card after they win a challenge with a King's Road. That is...
No,
really
King of Summer
good.
Is good. I don't think Kings of Winter works well with the King's Road, because if you're hitting their hand... With the location, what are the odds you're going to have even more cards in hand? I don't know.
Well,
it
runs into the same issue when you look at it that way as Song of Ice does. Once you've hit them enough times with the King's Road that matches, you're probably not hitting them with the agenda.
No, but you're keeping them down, and it's a good, even if it's just a one-time effect that hits three or four cards, I mean... That's four rounds of the Kings of Winter effect.
I think the four of those are kind of self-policing, you know? Say Kings of Summer goes crazy if it was taken off the list because of the extra draw. Well, if it does, you've got an easy answer. You run Song of Ice, and they can't even make it Summer against you. So then that polices it. That makes that a bad matchup. That starts being an issue, then maybe some people, you know, move across and play Kings of Summer, and, you know, like, that'll kind of keep rotating, and I think reach a better equilibrium than we've got right now, where those agendas are just virtually unplayed now that they're restricted.
Well, I think for the sake of the game, to make it to where every player didn't have to run a Song of Ice or Song of Fire deck to stop that potential mismatch... The Kings of Summer and Kings of Winter need to remain restricted. Otherwise, the downside of a Summer or Winter deck isn't really big enough
to merit that. We've also seen the spoiler for this new plot coming soon in the next cycle. That's a Raven that you just flip and discard an attachment. Which is also a knock to seasonal decks.
That is
correct. Yeah, I really think they need to come off. Especially when we're just talking about how... We're seeing the same agendas up at the top. The giving more options will allow for more decks to, you know, spread that love.
Yeah, I think that's likely to shake it up a little. All right, shall I head on to the next one?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. Next one, Robert Baratheon, the anti-shadows one. We've already had the errata to bring down the kind of broken combo potential with him, and I really think with the huge boost shadows got lately with Shadow Killer and all the Kingsguard, that Robert's built-in limiting factor is going to be enough right now.
I agree. I just don't see him being the huge problem that he was. And the only reason he was so epically good was abusing the chains, which he can no longer really do.
Right.
So, I say bring him off. And I kind of like this anti-shadows theme that Barra kind of has. Well, I guess doesn't really have. It's just a little bit there between him and the Knight of Flowers. But I kind of like that.
And they've got the army that discards Cards and Shadows, and yes. And Pylos that does as well.
So, I mean, there's some tech there, and I kind of like that, especially with where the meta is right now. And you have to remember, when he came into play, Shadows was all the rage, and I think now that maybe not quite as prolific from a deck archetype standpoint, but people are splashing it in, and more people are likely to have answers for him. I don't think he deserves being restricted, especially with all the other good Roberts we got right now. I mean, what is he really hurting?
Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean? All the good Roberts we have?
Well, the event one, recycling one, is seeing a lot of play right now.
Yeah, with that broken ass Knights of Hollow Hill deck.
This Robert,
I au contraire, sir. As far as him not being able to utilize those chains, I definitely built. Greg had the. Remember Greg's discard deck?
Yeah,
that is based off of a deck that I created with Robert Baratheon in mind, and this was after his errata still, and he was still very effective putting those chains on him, and I ran Maester of the Citadel to return other attachments I had to put on him, and it worked very well. That deck could only get increasingly better if Robert Baratheon could still stand more than three times per phase or round or whatever it is now.
Well, you know, there's also some newer cards that have entered the pool since then that can help rein in that type of deck, such as Cold Hands.
That's true, but Cold Hands can be completely canceled. Let's not forget about that.
Which cancels for Cold Hands are you running in that Barra deck?
Why wouldn't I run the Lani Iron Throne? The Lani Iron Throne is a fantastic card. And if I have a Robert Baratheon Maesters deck where I'm going to add like 20 gold or 10 gold or whatever to my gold pool with the gold link, there's no reason not to add it because I will have all the gold I need.
You're talking
I'm
about...
serious.
If you're adding 20 gold around, you've got...
I'm absolutely serious.
No problem.
Maybe not 20.
There's other stuff you're not worried
about. I'm absolutely running
10.
Yeah. I'm absolutely running one on my house. Why wouldn't you?
Can I still, though, just say, if you're running that deck, I may just leave my Preston Greenfield in Shadows.
Maybe you will.
And then you get your one use out of Robert a turn,
I've got the King's Law, I've got Pylos. Broken. I've got ways to get around it.
King's Law and Pylos are zero problem for Preston, but I think we're really starting to argue some.
Maybe you're right.
Pretty.
Yeah, you're talking about some clunky deck you're going to throw together.
Well, maybe the problem should be with Preston Greenfield then, not necessarily with Robert Baratheon. I'm just saying.
Possibly.
And also, if I'm running the Iron Throne, your Preston Greenfield is going to have a problem. Just saying.
Very possibly. We could. Daryl, we could keep going back and forth.
Oh, this
and
is ridiculous.
If you've got the Iron Throne, I can say that I'm using City Besiege. Like, that's getting way too far down the rabbit hole.
I've got two He Calls
a Thing games in my
hand.
I played two of them in my deck. Imagine that.
Yeah. Too far down the rabbit hole. How about we move to the next card?
Anyways.
Okay. My next one here may be a surprise to some folks. I'm going to vote Orphan of the Green Blood. Now, this isn't just because of my own personal love of Martell. And yes, I admit Orphan is probably a little above the power curve. But here's the thing. What kind of deck does it reward the most? Martell control, yes. But being a zero-cost character, rather than just a straight-up event like, say, Burning on the Sands or something, it rewards Martell control decks that do have a setup much more than it rewards Knights of the Hollow Hill. Will Knights of the Hollow Hill possibly play it? sure, it's possible. But at that point, it's just an event slot to them. Now, for the folks that are saying that Knights Hollow Hill doesn't have enough of a drawback and all the control decks just default to it, I feel taking Orphan off plays up one of the weaknesses of Knights of Hollow Hill, or at least one of the strengths that non-Knights of Hollow Hill decks have, which is setup. And being a control card, I think it may, you know, possibly open up some better options for non-My Agenda builds.
Hell no, you're wrong and you're stupid.
I can get behind this.
No, both of you just
Orphan
need to shut up.
Blood. And Orphan of the Green Blood is not a broken-ass card. The reason why Orphan of the Green Blood was put on this list is because it was in every Martell deck. Would it
for
jump in
reason.
Every Martell deck after it came off?
Fuck yeah!
Maybe it
what
would.
Maybe.
But here's the thing. This card is the epitome of what Martell wants to do, and the epitome of what their design and their theme is to have less characters than you, still control you, and still pound on your ass.
That's also nice. It's a big boon for other agendas like Bloodthirst or some of the other newer Martell stuff that wants to have less characters.
Yes, I strongly think that this card should be taken off. Yes, it is powerful. Absolutely. It is, but I would like to see this card played a lot more.
Is the refugee still restricted? How can you justify the refugee still being restricted and bring a zero-cost dude, a non-unique zero-cost off?
The Orphan discards himself for his effect anyways. He discards himself for his effect anyways.
Guys, the Orphan lights that you're seeing, I forget the name of them, where you meal him to take
Merchant of the Green Blood.
Yeah, the Merchant.
It's seeing great play, and I think it's super strong, and to take this off with it? No. Holy cow.
I don't know why you think that Orphan is super strong.
I mean,
he's good.
That guy has some different pluses and minuses.
He's
of course, he does stick on the board, but he has a built-in cancel.
We can give icons and take them.
Right.
That's fine.
That's great.
It's okay. It is okay. The Orphan of the Green Blood is a one-off 90% of the time. Every now and then they're going to have a narrow escape that brings it back.
Not a ban list. This is a restricted list, and it needs to stay where it is.
I disagree.
Oh, Jesus. Give them that and Burning on the Sands? That'll be great. That's what I call a positive play experience.
Well, also, I would like to point out, as Daryl mentioned, again, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but Lanny is very popular and strong at the moment, and what does that also bring? That sure brings the Lannister Iron Throne, which is...
It's one card out of one house.
Sure.
One card.
And this is also one card in one house.
But you can't talk about the reason why it's balanced and kept in check being one card in one house.
Well, sure. I could also say that Targ potentially neuters it really hard. But I just think it would push certain directions I would like to see pushed without totally knocking things over.
I believe it would knock it over and then, like, take a piss. Like, it would destroy things. I really do. I really think that it would...
I don't know.
Do you think, like, Quentin would just become unbeatable with Orphan available? Like, what exactly do you think is going to happen there?
The boon, it's so efficient, it's so under-costed for its ability, I think. Like you said, it helps flops if you're going that route. It helps the control if you're going that route. It's just such a good card. You know, I thought we just got done having Martell beat our faces in it every tournament.
Out of curiosity,
I'm just ready for him to take a back seat for a little bit.
Is, like, Harry the Riverlands still in that realm for you that's just, like, bonkers good? I mean, both of these take out a character for a turn. Now, granted, Harry is an event, but Orphan of the Green Blood, that's part of why I would like to see it returned, is because it can be played on setup, which pushes away from Knights of the Hollow Hill.
I don't know. Again, it's a restricted list, not a ban list. You can still run him. If you want him, you can go get him.
Right.
And I think...
But I couldn't run him in my Kings of the Summer deck.
Yeah.
What the hell? Or Kings of Summer, rather. Not the
there's
summer.
A reason for that, and that's fine.
We all remember that Martell Kings of Summer deck. It was saucy, for sure. Anyways, let's move on.
Okay,
let's
all
move
right.
on.
Next one I personally would like to see come off is the Conclave. I did a good bit of thinking here about what could be done to boost Maesters back up a little bit. They've gotten hammered with a couple things lately. And I think, in my mind, Conclave would be the best one to take back off. I still don't really want to take Tinlink off because attachments are still precarious, shall we say. And I wasn't sure about the agenda itself. But I think the Conclave is nice because it opens up some of the non-Maester agenda builds a little more, like the Maesters Behind the Throne deck I was working on, and it gives some boost to things like Greyjoy Maesters that need that higher strength guy. So
I agree. With both the agenda, especially with the agenda and the Tinlink on there, I feel like Maesters are finally... the Maester decks I see are finally functioning how I think Maester decks are always envisioned to be played. Kind of the feel and the how the chains interact and just kind of the how the game is played with it.
Plus, we've got the big knocks against them lately in Cold Hands and potentially Ygritte. And, of course, the Conclave is a little dangerous when Ygritte might pop out at any moment and take them from you.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, giving them a Conclave back I don't think hurts at all. And we're not really seeing that agenda played. And I don't think the Conclave by themselves breaks that in any way.
I don't think it breaks it, but it might, give that just enough to make people consider Maesters instead of, say, everyone's favorite agenda Bashon at the moment.
I think that the reason the Conclave got restricted was obviously to hamstring the Maester agenda. Now, the Maester agenda, when it came out, the game had never seen anything like it. And it was, don't get me wrong, the Maester agenda is awesome. Like, it is cool. It is innovative. It was new to the game in every way. And I think it's really neat. It's just the game itself can't handle that agenda.
You want
and
the truth?
The problem,
you can't handle the truth.
Exactly. People couldn't handle it. Now, the thing about the Conclave is, A, with this agenda, you're obviously running a bunch of Maesters, so you're going to throw these guys out for 2, 3, sometimes 0 gold, depending on how you were doing and your deck style. And the Conclave was better than a lot of unique characters. It was better than a lot of unique characters. And in the Game of Thrones, the unique characters are supposed to be the characters that have better abilities, because their downside is once this character is dead, you cannot play them again. Well, once the Conclave died, you just played another. Or maybe you had 2, or maybe you had 3 out. And for any given reason, at any given time, you could give them Renown, Deadly, or Stealth. A lot of the time it was Renown to punch it through at the end there. And they were really big and really nasty. And I think a part of the game was, or a part of the decision-making there from FFG was, hey, these guys are better than our unique characters, and they're really nasty, and they're even played in non-Maester decks where people just play Apprentice Collars on their guys and a couple of Chud Maesters and roll from there. And so that's why I think they're on the restricted list, and that's why I think they should stay there, is because they kind of go backwards in the game in making non-unique characters just so much better than a unique character can be, with the Intrigue power icon, and hence with a Maester of War could be a tricon, and out of Martell you can run to the Spears and really rock and roll from there. So, you know, I think that's wait a sec. With two Spears, is that only your Martell characters, don't Neil, or all your characters?
No, it's all of yours.
It's all your characters. Okay. I'm not making stuff up. So, you know, that's why I think they should stay there. I think that the Maester agenda is awesome, and I love the Conclave. I just think that in a different game, it could be a balanced thing. But I think right now, in Game of Thrones, as it is still, it would still be too strong. Not every deck, at least in a perfect world, won't contain Ygritte with the trait manipulation effects or Cold Hands, which, yeah.
I'd like to see one of the three Maester cards come off. I think having all three on just is way too brutal, and you can see it because no one's playing it. No one's even, I mean, I've taken some stabs at it, but...
And, no one's playing it for a reason, though.
And I think between the three that are on there right now, taking the Conclave off changes things the least. I would like to start with kind of the baby steps sort of thing as far as bringing that back.
I mean, if you bring those guys back, especially in Melee, you think you're going to see Cold Hands everywhere in Melee right now?
Oh, this is the joust.
I see what you're saying. You think you're going to see Cold Hands in every joust as it is.
There are separate lists here, and I did up separate changes. But
okay, you're right. I still don't. I just don't think it's good for the game. I like the Conclave. I like Maesters, don't get me wrong. But with the game where it's at right now, I just don't think we can handle it.
Well, and here's the thing. If you pull off, really, if you pull off any of the three, you're choosing, if it's the agenda, you're running the agenda, and then one of the other two. Either running the Conclave or the Tin League, depending on what you're going for. Mm-hmm. If it's one of the other ones, you're running that, and the agendas, you're restricted. Well, not necessarily, depending on, if it's the Conclave, not necessarily, but, you know, I mean, that's the setup here. That's what you're going to choose. So... I think something needs to come off to make Maesters viable, but really, I don't think it matters a ton what you give them. I'd almost say take the agenda off and let people choose which way they want to play the Maesters, if they want to be more aggressive with the Conclave or more controlly with the Link. But I agree with Will 100% that something needs to give those poor bastards a boon, because you're just not seeing them at all. And they went from hero to zero so fast. And I think they've just been nerfed to the ground.
Agreed. They got nerfed so hard, and then now we've had some more card releases that just screw around with that even more. I think they need a leg up right now. Okay, the next one that I would like to see taken off the restricted list, Threat from the East. You know, no one's choosing that as they're restricted. The errata already fixed the main kind of broken interaction that caused problems. Right now, it being a restricted card is just kind of a relic. I think we take it off, we see if maybe some aggro decks want to give it a try to combat some of the, you know, high, like, card advantage-based control decks. There we go, the ones where their hand really matters a lot. And,
yes, CA,
you know,
decks.
Yeah, there we go, the CA decks. And see if that gives aggro a little bit of a leg up. Or if anybody bothers to choose it still, even if after it's taken off the list.
After the errata, this card became useless, I guess is the word I'm looking for. I don't understand wanting to draw three cards, then discard three cards, or vice versa.
Well, if you have three crappy cards in your hand, or three dead cards, I could see...
That's going to make it into your plot deck, really?
Yeah, true.
Well, there might be this weird chance where I might be able to discard three of these cards and replace them.
With TLS, it's an auto draw cap.
Yeah.
So
I guess you're right. Well, not with the errata, though. If you don't,
yeah,
right?
You know, it's still just your opponent still does it normally. You don't get to do that stupid...
Right.
Screw them thing.
Right.
You still will not discard three, and then you'll just draw your three. They will do the effect as written.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So it's still, you know, a pro for you. I mean, you come out ahead three cards. So I think you'll see play with it there. But now I don't know of a lot of other places. Maybe some kind of recursion deck, if you're doing like a Kindly Man thing, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you would
maybe even just... regular bearer recursion. Maybe you just want to go ahead and toss three cards out of your hand so they're ready for Mel's scheme in another couple turns.
Right. But
I don't know.
You got to think that the card is called Threat from the East. It's obviously got Daenerys on it. Like, this card, I assume, was created for use with the Targaryen house card. What advantage do the Targaryens get from this card?
Well, they got a lot of recursion, like Danny's Chambers and recruitment and...
Yeah.
Right. They now, that being said, are you going to build a deck around this where you want to discard cards? I mean, maybe. Possibly. You could have recruitment and some other things
Renault's
like that.
Renault's deck might have looked at it.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe it would have.
Here's the thing. If the question is, you know, does the plot immediately jump out there and just go crazy, you know, even the stuff you're mentioning right now, Daryl, definitely
right.
means it won't, or
absolutely.
That it doesn't look like it in your eyes. So exactly. I say that sounds like a great time and reason to drop it off the list.
Yeah, it should absolutely come off. There should be no hesitation there. And if the Laughing Storm deck or whatever wants to draw three cards off of it, whatever. Like, I don't see a reason for it to be on there, and maybe that would work into the Noble Cause deck running the Laughing Storm. And
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe that's an option. They look at that so they can get a three-card burst.
That counting favors and negotiations, mm-hmm. and you're drawing some pretty good stuff out of it.
And, you know, Rush should be a part of the game, and I there's no reason I don't think that we should, you know, continue to embrace Rush as being a part of the game. Long, drawn-out, control-based games shouldn't be the only way you can play this, and you should have to tune your deck according. So I have no I embrace Rush. I say, hey, bring it on. If you can win in two turns, that's my fault for not coming up with a deck that could stop you. So,
I don't know
Rush decks are going to be able to use this.
Rush, but
I mean,
we're struggling to come up with legit reasons to run it with all the new plots that have come out.
No, right?
I definitely don't think it needs to be restricted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And I think it will be taken off. I think in the next FAQ,
I'd almost like to see a rule where since we collect stats now, if a restricted card doesn't hit a top cut at any regional...
Yeah, then it should just be taken off.
It should
just be taken off. I don't know about that. I think that some cards are restricted with the intent that people will not play them, really.
Then just ban them.
I do. I don't think
well, that gets
the point
around
to ban them.
Say the word ban.
Exactly. I think that the idea when the Maesters came out, that left a really nasty taste in not just everyone's mouth, but also the designers' mouths. They were like, we thought that this was going to work, and it did work. It worked too well, and so now we need to open it up to where other people can play other decks, because a lot of people were complaining about Maesters, which, that I can totally see that. And I'll reiterate, Maesters were not bad necessarily. It was awesome. It was cool. But the game was on a different level at that point where it just couldn't handle it. And I still think it couldn't. Anyways, getting back to Threat from the East, we can handle it.
Okay.
Bring it back.
Yeah.
So on to the next one then. Also a plot choice. This is, now bear with me here, Negotiations of the Great Sept. And we had some issues with it before, but I think a lot of that was also due to being in conjunction with TLV, or the Long Voyage. That's been errated into oblivion for the moment, so I would like to pull Negotiations back out, dust it off, kind of see where things go with just it as a viable option, not paired with TLV. A lot of folks recently I've seen have also been griping about the city plots, and some folks have been calling for an additional restriction of something else there, like, say, City Besieged or something. I think pulling Negotiations off the list is a nice solid boon to aggro decks, as well as a way to push away from the whole city plot cycle, since Negotiations doesn't play well with that. And I think enough people would want to run it that we would definitely see the whole cycle dropping appearances.
I'll let you take this one first, Kyle.
Oh, Will. I just... this plot is so good. And, I mean, granted, I've run it as my restricted several occasions now, and do not regret it. It's so good, and it's good in everything. And I think that's with this, you have to remember, part of this huge expanded restriction list is to kind of give you this faux card rotation feel. you know, the decks have to evolve and change, and what was hot 2 years ago cannot be hot now. And I just think this card stagnates things so much. Because there's, unless you're running cities and need to run cities, like, this is so good. Two claim, the effect is great out of almost, I struggle to think of decks that don't want to run this plot.
Now, I've been on the record in the past as saying that Negotiations of the Great Sept should not have been restricted because it is such a boon to aggro decks, which I wholeheartedly, with every fiber of my being, agree with. Aggro decks, this card belongs to them. They deserve this card. The problem is that control decks can take advantage of this. A heavy control deck can sit there and not include as much draw in their deck just because they know they have this plot coming and can play this. And I have seen this deck firsthand. I've seen this plot, rather, sorry, firsthand be abused. And it was this year at Worlds, even. It can be abused by using City of Spiders as well to copy it and do it again.
Yep.
This plot, even if you eroded it to be claim one, would still see a ton of play.
Maybe. I've had it pointed out.
Absolutely,
to me
it would.
That counting favors is almost the same thing as a claim one negotiations. And how much play does counting favors see?
I think part of that's the wording.
Sort of. Counting favors can take you from 1 to 4 and also give your opponent 3 cards. It does not, however, take you from 1 to 5 and give your opponent, who has a hand of 8 cards, would he choose to go down to 5 or something like that? Think about that.
Counting favors, like, there is that drawback. It's going to happen.
Wrong, yeah. This card is good. And I like this card for aggro. And I really wish there was some kind of weird errata that says, if you're running an aggro deck, you may run this this plot. But, you know, you can't do that.
If you have at least 40 characters.
Not only does it have to stay on there, but I would almost question whether it still belongs in the game entirely. And, like, I didn't lose to this deck at Worlds, granted, that was running this plot. But it most certainly, is a problem. Let me put it that way. It's ridiculous. And me and this guy went like 11 plots or something. Really, really nice guy. Anyways, and so I got to see it happen twice or even more times with City of Spiders. I don't know. But It needs to stay on there, and it possibly could need to leave the game. And granted, I've gone on record before saying that I think this is a great card, and I do for aggro decks, but since control decks can use it and quite effectively, you might just need to get rid of it entirely.
That's crazy talk.
I don't know about getting rid of it entirely, but I will say I think a lot more people should have been trading in their hands when their opponent played negotiations, and that was not happening as much as it should have.
Well, if I have like
but that's an
cards
entirely
in hand,
different matter.
It most certainly is. I don't know about that, man.
I certainly don't think it needs to go. I think restricted is a nice place for it to be, and I love restricted plots. I think they're great.
I do too.
I don't think it's that bad, because it can backfire.
Sort of. Sometimes.
Your deck has to play according to not a very specific script, but there is a script, and if you get way off on it,
right.
Like, if you're going to play against Choke, like, you can't really use this. Like, you're never going to be in a good place where it's going to have the effect you want it to have.
I think it depends on your deck. Again, the guy I was going against at Worlds this year, or last year, I should say, I was running a Choke deck, and he was still using it to great advantage. Like, it's not quite right. There's something wrong. There should be, I don't know what it should be, but it should be a little different, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, I like it.
Okay.
So there.
You and 50% of the Thrones community, so
But how many?
I totally understand. I like the card too. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, does it still belong in the restricted list? Absolutely.
All right.
Yes,
well,
absolutely.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next one then.
Jesus.
The next one I've got here, I'm going to lump six cards together. There are six cards that I think need to come off all in one chunk right now. And that's Fury of the XYZ. Choose your animal here. I really think at this point, there's so many other great plots right now. They're not auto includes. They are, decent effects still. It's nice that the traits turn on some of the solid events for some of the houses, especially, you know, a lot of the, again, control decks that want to jump on the city cycle bandwagon. This doesn't necessarily jump into that plot deck because there's only so much room to go around. So maybe for some people it squeezes out some city plots. I've seen some people that have been requesting retaliation be taken off, which I think is a bad idea to try and help aggro. I think the Fury plots, especially since the effects are all challenged based, are much more likely to help aggro than retaliation is, which of course makes your opponent go first when you win initiative. And as a control deck, that is always what I want.
Right.
I always played retaliation in control decks,
right,
not aggro.
Yeah, yep. Same here. Retaliation absolutely needs to stay on there. I don't know what those people are smoking, but it's been handed out at Woodstock, whatever it is. Now, Fury of the blank. These are very, very close to coming off. I think after a few more cycles, a year or two, I think they'll absolutely come off. I think right now they're still just barely in that spot where a 5-7-1 is still really, really good, and there's no reason not to put it in there. I think they're close. Don't get me wrong, especially with the more plots that are coming out and the fact that they only work against two opposing houses at any one given time. It's very close, but I still don't think the game's ready for that just yet. But I think in the next couple of years we'll see them come off.
I think they would be a huge boon for aggro. What I like about them, people forget, is they're great openers, and I feel like a lot of the great openers right now are more control-oriented.
Yeah.
And I like that it's an auto, and it's they all have those plot keywords a lot of those houses really love to have. To be able to drop a first-turn power struggle, especially if you're like Targ, and there's your to-be-a-dragon answer, or if you're doing it out of Lannister, you got an Intrigue Gambit, like... Being able to work some of those effects back in, knowing you have a first turn you're putting in your use pile, I think will open up some things. Some of the points to try and get decks out, but especially new decks.
It's a little too easy, though. It's a little too easy, though. That's the problem.
Well, again, that, you know, when was the last time you saw someone run a Fury as a restricted?
Yeah.
Right, a very long time, and that's...
I cannot recall a time. Sorry, aside from, come to think of it, Kristen for a while was using it as the restricted card in her Greyjoy Black sales deck, so that she could use to be a Kraken. I don't remember now if she stuck with that, or if she changed that.
Right. And they were on the restricted list for a reason, though, and that was because they were in every single deck. Would they be in every single deck now? Maybe not, but it's hard to say. It's hard to say that a 5-7-1, you know, 5 gold is still a lot of gold, and 7 initiative is still a lot of initiative. And let's not forget
summer.
Let's not forget some of these effects, though.
Burning bridges.
Let's not forget some of these effects, though. The Stark one lets you kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The Greyjoy and a Lannister control of someone.
But that's been errated, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It has, to only the end of phase. Correct. But regardless, these are still strong effects, and it's a 5-7-1 plot.
I don't think they'll be off there in a couple of years,
but I still don't think the game's ready for it yet.
I also still, though, you know, all of those effects, like you said, they only hit two houses, and they're all challenge-based. You have to win a challenge. You have to go out and... do something aggressive in order to have them go off. So that's why I think they are a bigger boon to aggro decks than control. And that's one of the things right now. You know, folks are really harping that aggro has fallen behind. And I think these would be a boon to help that.
And control decks see the effect coming, so you can still, you know, manipulate the game and avoid it if you need to. It's not like it's a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I think the game was, from a plot standpoint, was so much different when these came out.
Yeah, I mean, these have been on the restricted list, what, since the advent of the restricted list?
Yes, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. That's
they pretty much instantly
ever
died.
Now. There are, but there are a ton of better, maybe not strictly better, but a ton of competitive choices for those seven slots in your plot deck.
I still don't think it can take it quite yet. I think a couple years, a couple more awesome plots come out.
A couple more years? Jeez.
Yeah, a couple more years. Which is only, what, three cycles or something?
Why are you hating on the plots? These stay, negotiations, these out of the game?
Absolutely. Because plots are the most powerful part of a deck. All the great decks that have won championships have had excellent plots. And that's what some people don't understand. When you're creating your deck, your plot deck is just as, if not more important than the 60 cards in your deck. They really, truly are, and they can make all the difference.
Okay.
I agree. I think it's an opener. So let's assume that the scenario you envision is this gives aggro a high gold, high initiative, somewhat aggressive opening plot. But a lot of these effects, I mean, yeah, it's first turn, so you can kill a dude, you can steal a dude, but with, like, especially the bear one, who are you stealing first turn for a phase that's going to...
That's a great point. That's a great point. That's another, knife towards Brotherhood that I don't agree with.
Like, it's attachments and power, you know?
Yeah. Well, discarding attachments and power, you're right, that is pretty big, which we are already going to have effects that... that do some equally, you know, akin stuff, like Cold Hands or Slander and Lies to do at least power. You're right. I just don't think it's quite to that point yet. I think a couple more cycles and we'll absolutely be ready for it, where it's just not like, oh, I don't have another plot that I can't think of. Let's just put a Fury in, because it's a 5-7-1. And that was the problem. The problem was that, like, oh, when in doubt, hey, put a 5-7-1 in your deck, not like, oh, man, this effect's really good, but maybe I need this effect. It's like, my sixth plot, 5-7-1. That is the problem.
Well,
the problem is not necessarily the effect.
Off.
It's also the gold, the initiative, and the claim.
Well, take three of them off.
You can't
we'll see
that.
What happens.
You can't
I think that'd be hilarious.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, all right. Well, that's actually everything I have listed in my mind for coming off in Joust. You guys want to rebut that with any of other ones, or should I go and list the couple I have to go on and then let you guys go after that?
You were much more generous than me on what should come off, so...
Fair enough.
What else should come off? Jeez.
I mean, your answer can very certainly be nothing. That is allowable.
Yeah.
There's nothing I'm fighting for.
There's... Yeah, me neither.
That wasn't already listed.
Okay.
The only one...
There's two on there.
There's one I could possibly think of to take off, which may or may not make me a dick, but Castellan of the Rock, and I get that, you know, Lannister control right now is through the hizzy, but I really like Castellan of the Rock, and I don't know if he necessarily should still be restricted, given he's a limited response. But maybe I'm wrong.
He really shouldn't be. I know. I'm with you, Daryl. Especially if I think the writing's on the wall. The way I gauge stuff going on the restricted list is when you start seeing that shit out of house on a somewhat frequent basis, that the time's come. Like Asha being, I mean, I love that out of Power Behind the Throne.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, especially out of Greyjoy, a lot of Pentashi and out of some other houses, you're seeing some play. It definitely was in almost every Lannister deck. I think it's going back on. And if it's going back on, I definitely, definitely think Castellan needs to come off.
Right. And
I was surprised they didn't before Worlds, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And my other, quite possibly, is Mira Reed. And I, for one, realize that Mira Reed is incredible. Don't get me wrong. She is amazing. But she keeps some of these other decks completely in check. She, not only will she keep Robert Baratheon in check, who could come off then.
She would be another way to that would hammer Maesters, though.
Correct. But that's another thing. She, with that, you may even see her Conclave come off. With that, you may see a number of other things come off the restricted list with her running around. Would she be in every deck? That's the problem that we run into.
She would. Like, what do you mean? Like, I know she's restricted, but if you're playing Stark right now, what else are you choosing?
Right.
I mean,
I think Stark decks choose a few different things. I mean, Negotiations of the Great Sept could definitely be one of them.
Oh, over
Stark,
Mira? That'd
Stark,
be tough.
Yeah, no, Stark still has a lack of draw in that house. They still do, and Negotiations of the Great Sept is perfect for a Stark murder deck. I know because I've done it firsthand.
I'm not saying it's not good, but I just don't feel like Stark has... But it's not much of a choice. I think she's kind of on there...
Mm-hmm.
To make you, maybe it's not for her, but mm-hmm. So when another problem start card comes off, you can throw it on there, and now they have to choose.
Yeah.
Like right now, it's for the
You're
most
right.
part,
yeah.
You go Mira, and
yeah.
It's not a choice, but one day it will be. It's kind of like
right.
the early days when like TLS came off of Bera. It's like, okay, well, what choices
right.
do you really have here? Is there a restricted
right.
list really being felt?
I get you. The downfall of Mira. I'm sorry, Will. Go ahead.
Oh. I was just going to say, you know, I'm not sure that I want her to be taken off, but one thing that would be in favor of her being taken off is she suddenly makes, like, Shadow's agenda control builds out of, say, Baratheon or Martell or Lannister look a bit more attractive when they have her available without using up their restricted slot. So.
Well... And yeah, because there is an investment that goes into using her, especially out of house. You have to have Stark characters that are going to leave play to get her to bounce back. I think the downfall of Mira is how hard it was to kill her, unless you were running Tark
mm-hmm.
and you just burn her ass down. But that's the problem. I think she wouldn't ever have gotten restricted had she had a built-in cancel. Like any player may discard two cards from his hand to cancel this effect, or something along those lines, which, in essence, would make her worse, obviously. But that was the problem, is she'd pop out, hey, I'm going to blank your influence, or I'm going to blank this awesome character and fuck all this shit up, or, you know, this, that, and the other. And then, oh, I'm going to leave, so then you can't hurt me. That was the problem.
I think she needs to be on there. I don't think Stark is really feeling the restricted list right now.
That's
so.
True.
Cause, I mean, but that was the point with, like, No Quarter being on there. It's like, okay, well, don't want to kill a ton of things or don't want to blank a couple things. Like, you had to at least choose. Now it's...
Well, and that's good because those should be two different decks. You know, Mira is a very, you know, like a tempo deck. Not necessarily control, not necessarily aggro, but a little something in the middle.
Well, now Stark's
no
getting
quarter.
Their cake and eating it.
Yeah. You're right, but, you know... I like Mira. You know, she's a unique character. Again, when she's dead, she's dead. granted, you're not playing some of that recursion. What am I thinking of? The one that brings a dead character back?
Call
the Maiden. Call the Three-Eyed Crow. Would bring her back. And then,
what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe she belongs on there after all.
Well, if you take her off, now Stark has Negotiations, Mira, No Quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
I would just like to see her. I don't know.
That would
like
be a tower. Pretty big aggro boost.
Holy cow.
Well, Stark was very underrepresented at Worlds. And
that was surprising. Yeah. I still don't get
it. It wasn't surprising. I don't
with
think
them getting
it was surprising.
No quarterback, I figured
it wasn't surprising
would
bust out with
the non murder and knight stacks.
With the non agenda slash character agenda decks running around. Lannister had a decent one. Martell had a great one, apparently. So I've been proven wrong. Quentin is the tits. It was totally... I mean, so that hits your Northern Cavalry flank. It was obvious that they were going to have some issues, and not to mention the other houses were looking pretty damn sexy. Anyways.
No, I was...
We should move on. I'm sorry. Okay.
That's
all right.
Talking
nuts forever.
Okay, well, I've got three cards then that I think should be on the list. How about we hit on those? Now.
Yeah, let's hate on some cards.
Okay.
Yeah, let's hate. I love hating.
Two of these are going to be returning cards that had previously been on the list. I think that Aegon's Hill and Pentoshi Manor need to be returned. Now, Aegon's Hill, just in general, is an extremely powerful card. It's also extremely powerful in Knights of the Hollow Hill builds for a variety of reasons. And it was a pretty important piece of Greg's Monstrosity of a Greyjoy Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. Now, I don't by any means want to knock that deck out of contention, because I think it's cool, and I think it's totally a valid way to play the game, but it would bring it down just a little peg. They'd have to choose Aegon's Hill for their restricted and, you know, give up Search and Detain. Not a huge change, but just a little something, just to pull it down there. Pentoshi Manor, on the other hand, I think is just a little bonkers. I could not believe that came off the list. I mean, that was definitely a large chunk of the deciding factor in what got me playing Lanny at Worlds. You know, in aggregate, that thing just owns games, and I would like to see its appearances brought back in check.
I think something has to happen with that card. Either make it unique or throw it back on the restricted. But yeah, the manor has to. An answer needs to be there. And the hill, you have to remember, it's not just Greg that's running characterless. I've seen it on Octagon all over the place. I've seen it in my own meta. And, I mean, it is something that, especially now that there was worldwide success with it, you're going to see more people attempt and look at it from different perspectives. Because I've seen it with different agendas, different approaches. So I think hitting the hill is probably the right play there. Like you said, they're not going to feel it a ton, but it is going to make them make decisions. And I think that's really what a restricted list should do.
Aegon's Hill, for me, can stay. And the reason I say that is because Aegon's Hill has been around for a very long time. And it's been fine for a long time. And then it got thrown on the restricted list because... one copy always made it into a Targaryen deck, which is fine. I think a lot of people these days run one of every unique that has a decent ability, but they're not super great anyways. I don't think it's a huge deal in that regard. What I will say is, as far as the character light or the character list deck is concerned, is that, yes, they completely took advantage of it. I think that character light is very cool, or character list, whatever, is very cool. How much it feels like you're playing the Game of Thrones, I think the problem with character light or character list, however you want to say it, decks is the amount of resets in them. That is the problem. The problem isn't their way to get characters into your dead pile, or to even bring your characters from the dead pile back. The problem is the amount of resets and board wipes that they do is completely unfun, for lack of a better way to say it. If we fix that, then we fix the problem. How to fix that? I don't know. I'm not a designer for FFG. That's not my job. But, you know, like, I don't know. But I think it's really awesome. I think it's fun. I think it's cool. Does it belong in the Game of Thrones? As much as I like it and love it, probably not. Really?
Ew. Totally
it
does.
It probably doesn't. Really?
Yeah.
It really? Does the head of your house, and do you put the faith of your house in the backing of your house to claim their power in the hands of no one?
Yeah.
Or do you put it into characters and have a character claim their power and claim the Iron Throne for you? Like, I'm curious here.
This game has always, I felt, been about tilting the game and the board in your favor as much as possible. And if flipping the board upside down is how you accomplish that, then by all means, go ahead.
I mean, I'm just saying.
I like playing.
And I think that turning characters into warships is freaking cool. And I like the idea of a character light deck, a character list deck. Not so much. Like, wiping the board again and again is not fun. You would never play this deck in a casual format. If you do, shame on you. Seriously.
No,
on you. You should feel bad because you're just wiping the board of your friend's characters constantly and not really indulging in the idea of let's take it down to the basics. You have your house. You are House Lannister or House Stark. And you're trying to claim the Iron Throne via military battles.
You are sounding dangerously like a Ned player.
Well, careful. I'm no Ned here, okay? I'm just saying. So Aegon's Hill is fine. I think it always will be. It's the character light or the character less deck that is the problem.
No,
Pentoshi Manor completely belongs on there. It was under-costed from the get-go. That was an oversight, I think, by playtesters, is that it probably should have been 2 cost from the get-go. Possibly be unique.
Yes,
I don't know.
Unique, like Valencia said.
Now, it's a good idea. It's a good idea, I think, to put in the game to slow down aggro decks, so especially a Barrow Rush deck. That's a good idea. No matter who you're talking to, that's a good idea. How to fix it is another question entirely. Maybe just leave it restricted. It's still a great restriction card to choose from.
Yeah.
Once you get 3 of those out, like, what up, bro? You know? Well, what are you going to do? I think Aegon's Hill can stay off. Pentoshi probably needs to get his candy ass back up there.
All right. Well, I've got one more that I do think probably ought to go on that list. And that is Rally Cry. When that card came out, I looked at it and I was like, holy crap, this looks awesome. It's like, I mean, it's like Search and Detain almost. And I couldn't believe it had been printed. And I kind of raved about that. And I was almost universally panned when it came out, for having that opinion. And suddenly now everyone says it's a problem. And of course, Bungled Orders into Rally Cry obliterates a lot of stuff. In fact, a lot of House of Dreams builds. And despite having thought that House of Dreams was a bad idea design-wise when it was released, it's part of the meta now, and at least opening it up to be viable is a good option. So I think, along with some of my suggestions up above, for stuff to come off the list that might make City Plots see a little less play. I think putting Rally Cry on the restricted list means you'll see a little less of it, you'll see a little less City Besieged, and hopefully make House of Dreams playable, just not always completely safe.
Well, why do you say that this getting restricted would make you see less City Besieged?
No, I was saying along with the stuff that I was seeing above, that would make City stuff hopefully see a little less play, would make House of Dreams more playable. Rally Cry is one one subset, and then the changes to discourage City Plots is the other subset, and the two of those would make House of Dreams a little more playable.
Yeah. Is the problem with Rally Cry, or is the problem with Knights of the Hollow Hill? If I'm not mistaken, your plot revealed and your used pile are two different things.
Right.
So turn one Bungled Orders into Rally Cry would net you a 2 cost or lower character location, which isn't that big of a deal. It being paired with Bungled Orders could be different, but I think the problem lies with Knights of the Hollow Hill. Correct?
Maybe. I don't know. See, I don't have any real problem with Knights of the Hollow Hill running Rally Cry if that's what they had to blow their restricted card on, you know? Then they're not using that on, say, Search and Detain or Hatchling's Feast or Long Lances or the Viper's Bannerman or Burning on the Sands, what have you. I think that's a legit trade. But I just want that to actually be a trade.
Right.
Hmm.
I don't know if Rally Cry belongs on there from the get-go. especially since we haven't seen it in tournament play yet, and how the main thing that's going to really benefit from it is Knights of the Hollow Hill, which we're seeing a plethora of plots really work out for it here recently. As far as seeing something put on the restricted list, it sure starts to see like Knights of the Hollow Hill might actually finally work its way up there.
The thing is, if you just put it on there, then you're not really, like, if you just put it on there without the other cards that it needs, then you're not really
restricting
anything.
It.
Yeah,
I don't know about
that's
that.
That's why I suggest
it's still on
back.
There. Negotiations from the Great Sept is still on there. I mean, that's still a good card.
Yeah,
for
apparently
it.
That card breaks the game for Daryl.
It's pretty.
See, I'm just surprised with Daryl really hating on those other plots. I'm surprised he does not want to see Rallycry on the restricted list.
I'd
rather see Besieged on here than Rallycry. That might just be me.
I would be okay with seeing Besieged, but I was kind of hoping, like I said, that some of my other suggested changes would make the city cycle look less attractive.
Right, and I think the problem that we're having, talking about any of the restricted plots, is the fact that the city plots keep being brought up. The city plots are awesome. They are fun. They are excellent. That's the problem. Maybe we should just get rid of city plots. I'm serious.
City plots are real
good. City plots are excellent. I love city plots. But maybe their synergy is too good compared to what's out
there. Taking a piece out helps, because right now you can literally hit whatever is currently being a problem. Between locations, characters, you can kneel stuff if you're behind on characters. Like, everything's there. If you take out one of them, I think location, because those stats coupled with the ability are just insane. Well, I mean, not insane,
right.
But...
Well, then you just play Rallycry, right?
Well, you're not building
on your
city
pile. Not always.
You're not building on your city pile.
That's true.
So...
But still...
If the point is to jazz things up, I think putting Besieged on there shakes things more than Rallycry does. But... What do I know? I am but a man.
Well, do you think that Rallycry should be on there, though?
That's tough. See,
have you ever even seen it in a game yet? Have you played a game with it yet?
I struggle until someone shows me a scenario and goes, see, this is insanely good. This is why you... And it's a scenario where you're just like, I can't beat that. I can't imagine a scenario where I could beat that. Then I like to throw things on there. But I don't know if either of them need to go on, but... If one of them did, if Nate came to me and said, Kyle, one of these two plots is going on the list and you get to choose, first I'd be very flattered, but then I would put Besieged on. Because I've seen it work, and it's a guaranteed hit on House of Dreams, which I would like Will would like to see more play out of. And the moment they flip a city opening plot, you just go, dang it, how many turns till this is getting blown up? And, I mean, that sucks. So at least with Rallycry, there's some limitations.
There is a lot of limitation.
Yeah, so...
I think the problem is just with Knights of the Hollow Hill.
One plot and one agenda I don't think makes a restricted list case.
Right. I agree with you.
So that would be my thought, is I would say that, once again, Will is stupid... And,
well, yeah, that's a common thought,
right?
City
at the end of the right,
take its place.
Well, I don't know about. I mean, I don't know. But as far as Rallycry goes, no, it does not belong on there. Most certainly, in a vacuum, it absolutely does not belong on there. Granted, with Knights of the Hollow Hill, yeah, maybe, you know. But right now, no, I don't think so. I think we'll see Knights of the Hollow Hill on there before long, without a doubt.
I don't know about that. Maybe.
mean, I don't necessarily want it on there, but...
I don't think they'll throw it. I think it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. Let's see how these new agendas shake things up.
Okay.
Plus, we don't know what's coming out in this next cycle. It may, at this point in time, because a lot of that we're going to see by the time regional season rolls around. It's going to start kicking out. So we may be sitting here going, oh, in the current play environment,
of course,
Hollow
Hill
is
so... The next queue update will be before that.
But Nate knows what's coming out.
Oh, does he? I didn't know that.
Well, the lead designer for the game knew that. People, like, I mean, you don't forget it, but it doesn't necessarily come to the forefront of your mind that when they look at the restricted list, they don't only look at where we are, but where we're going. So, I don't know. I think Hollow Hill's fine, and I'm curious to see, because it has been building steam, so let's see if some of that steam cools off in a chapter pack or two, or three, or four, or six.
I think that Knights of the Hollow Hill by itself is definitely fine, but we're starting to get more plots that may call for a change. We'll see.
Well, maybe we'll get some plots that flip that back. I mean, all it really takes...
I don't necessarily know if it's a bad thing, though.
No, but you look at, like negotiations. You know. I mean, one plot... I mean, you talk about how one plot did so much and turned things over for aggro and was so good. I mean... That's one card. All you need is one card in one of these packs that just rocks the house for aggro, and suddenly the Hollow Hill discussion seems silly. I mean, it's all it takes. Is one, like, one plot, or, like, one event called, like, Screw Valor, or, like...
Yeah. We have that. It's called Narrow Escape.
Yes, we do. Maybe you'll just
good old
see
Narrow
that.
Escape. All right. Anyways.
If you're going to make a Hollow Hill deck ditch their hand and their setup, I mean, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay. Well,
never forget.
Go ahead.
I was going to say people forget, and then I was like, never forget.
Never give up, never surrender.
Exactly. Okay, well, speaking of not surrendering, you know we never surrender? Melee.
There is
also a separate melee restricted list, as we had to remind Daryl. Here are my list of changes to it. They are considerably shorter. Taking off the melee restricted list? None. Everything that's on there should stay right where it is.
Yeah.
Including the Conclave in melee, Daryl. I want it to stay.
Whoa. Yeah. I think the Conclave should definitely stay. There are a few cards, well, mainly one that I think we should take off, but I guess we're talking about Are we talking about taking off right now? That's taking off.
I had nothing on take off.
All right, well, I'll let you start first about taking off, Kyle.
The melee list is so short as is that there's not a lot of like, you have to remember, when you look at the restricted list, you go, oh, that's restricted. Well, what are you giving up for it? And looking at the list, I don't see anything that jump screams to me as, oh, it's an atrocity that it's on there because you can't use it with blank and that's bad. So I'm with Will. Let it ride.
Let it ride, huh?
Sounds good to me.
I think there's definitely one we should take off.
What's that?
And that's Narrow Escape. Why Narrow Escape, you say?
It's fun at melee. It's hilarious.
That's easy. It's easy because there's always one motherfucker who the other two guys convince to ditch his hand so that you can't get your dudes back.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. Because Narrow Escape adds a part to the game that I think is just so unique. Where you're actually in position, where the guy who is obviously losing the game in a lot of regards will be like, you know what? Yeah, screw this guy. I'm not going to let him get first place. This Valor's going to go through. I'm going to discard my hand. And they're like, oh, all right. There's a huge downside to playing Narrow Escape. Very few times is anyone like, oh, no. All between the three of us, no, none of us are going to ditch our hands. Not even that guy with one card in his hand. Now, there's almost always going to be a guy to ditch his hand. And Narrow Escape is a fun part of melee. After a Valor happens and then the other two guys are talking, they're like, well, you know, I revealed accounting favors, maybe I'll, you know, choose you to get those cards after this resolves and all that jazz. Right? That's the way it'll work, right? Maybe I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Well, all the plots are resolved, right? And then that affects...
But it's a great
place.
Melee
That's
move
right.
to lie to him.
You're right. Well, see? There we go.
Lying is allowed in Melee.
I've never been above it. Ask the 2012 overall champion about that. I'll do it again, too. Oh, yeah, I'll choose you for summoning season next turn.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, Daryl. What on this list, if Narrowscape is critical to your deck, what are you giving up on this list to run it? Like, what decks have you been like, oh, I really wish I could have both these cards, but I just can't?
Well, I wish I could have Narrowscape and the Viper's Bannerman for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well.
Jeez, the Red Viper and Narrowscape would be fantastic, too. Val and Narrowscape would be amazing. What are you talking about? There's a ton of choices here. The Maester's Path and Narrowscape could be good. Shit, I need my Maesters around. Narrowscape so I could get my
but
Maesters
back. I feel
back.
Like all those cards
the Conclave,
you're saying
the
are
Scourge.
Much more critical
no, maybe not
than
Scourge. Do what?
I don't know. I feel like all those other cards, like it's not a choice for me. I would run the other over Narrowscape any day. I don't know. Maybe it needs to come off, but I don't. For the reason you said that, you do have three people who can screw you.
But maybe that's the idea of the reason why it's on there, is because they're like, well, maybe that third player doesn't always need to ditch his hand, even though they convince him to.
And it was and it got put on while we were like in the height of Melee collusion being a huge issue. So maybe there is some concern there.
Right.
Maybe.
But you know, the idea of like making deals in Melee, like, hey, dude, you're in a pretty bad place here. If you ditch your hand to stop him from winning here, because we're going to kill all his guys, you know, I will not attack you if you ditch your hand here, and I have some draw effects. You know, I'm playing some Dragon Tales to let you draw some cards or something. I don't know. You know, I think that's an okay card to have in Melee. Joust, that's a completely different monster. But Melee, I think we can afford to have Narrowscape in there.
For and, that, I'll agree with you. Know, just
especially since the cash has been taken off. You know? Yeah. That Lannister player is going to be able to draw his cards back up, so maybe he'll be like, you know what, bitch, I'll cash my hand. I'll have four cards by the end of draw phase. Let's do this.
I bet recursion decks are no problem whatever. Ditching their hand.
Mm. Yeah. So, take it off.
Take so, it no, off!
I'm okay with it being off.
Okay.
In well, Melee.
Tell you what, I also have a couple cards that I would like to see added. I don't think these ones will be big surprises. The first one is Melisandre's Favor. I think if the Baratheon Fury of the Stag, is scary enough in Melee to be restricted because of the just instant win situations it can make, I think Mel's Favor is even worse because it just sits there, you know, in your hand until you can win the game by taking a character by paying 3 gold. You don't even have to win a challenge like you do with to be a stag. So I think that's an issue in Melee.
Totally. 100% with you.
You are wrong. The one of the main reasons I think that the card Slander and Lies was printed is because the designers got sick of people winning games with these uber character decks and having 4 or 5 power or whatever on one character to help them win the game. I think that the idea of Mel's Favor is to continue to discourage the idea of placing a bunch of power, having one character to sit there and be your caboose to push you through.
I don't think it needs pushed down that much more. I think this year's Melee was the most like varied metagame we've seen. We saw Bruno take a Rhaenys Hill control deck to the top table. Mm-hmm. Kyle's playing Dragons, and now my brain shuts down. What were the other guys playing again? We had a discard.
Greyjoy,
House of Dreams, whatever the name of that was. What was it?
Longship Iron Victory.
Yeah, LIV. And then the other one was... Was it a Bera?
It's Bera...
Bera No Agenda, right?
Might have been No Agenda.
I think it was Bera No Agenda. If I'm not mistaken.
I mean,
just power gravity, good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's an example there of, I think, a really varied table. I played, like, straight up Neil Control and felt very competitive at all of my tables, and I just had a bad play that kind of tanked me in one game, or I would have made the cut. You know, looking around what I saw other people playing and everything, I don't feel that it's all just like uber character rush right now at all.
And I don't
correct.
Like, I mean,
it's not. It's not, which is why the reason that this card is okay, right?
But I think it flips things so hard, and I don't think Baron needs a boon right now in Melee. And I feel like this would just rock and shock.
Yeah,
I don't think
that is a consideration there as well.
Maybe it would take a Cersei for one turn or something. Which,
but that can be
fuck that deck anyways. Fuck that deck anyways. Like, I'm fine with that.
It could take anything.
Asinine intrigue rush deck.
Well, imagine this. Let's say you have a Mira that keeps being a problem, and she's happens to be out. Now you steal it. Now no one's doing a military at him, or at least you're not. Or better yet, now you're trading it, so some guy's doing a chump military at you, so you can kill off Mira. You can use it in a control scenario, an aggro scenario, a rush scenario. It needs to be restricted.
Yeah, it's just all around good, and it's not that hard at all in Melee. Like you said, you know, even if it doesn't win you a game right off the bat, if someone's got an intimidating character, steal it. Turn to the, you know, steal it from the guy on your right, turn to the guy on your left and say, hey, I won't defend the military. Just make that to me so I can kill this dude. You know? Like, and that to me, it's a deal, yes, which you can make in Melee, but it doesn't feel like the right type of deal. It really feels too gimmicky to me, you know?
All right, and that's a good point that you could do that for sure. It's a very relevant point. And you know what? I don't have a lot to say to that. That's a good point.
Now that
something
I
didn't
it,
think
you
of.
Think
now,
that would really suck if it happened to you.
Now, it would suck. You still are spending 3 gold on that.
Yeah.
That would suck. And the idea of Game of Thrones, the play, has always been like, your characters are expendable. That's rule number one. I think that's something that a lot of the good players think of on a constant basis, is my characters are expendable. Okay? And maybe this is going to make players think of Melee in a different way. Would it be shitty if someone did that to you? Yes. Would it be shitty if they took your character with 5 power on it and won the game at the gates with it? Yes. I would really like to see it, though, and see how Melee games pan out in multiple tournaments and things like that before we made an assumption like this. We saw out of the gates, out of its creation, we saw only one card I can think of that wasn't in play of a regular time before it hit the restricted list, and that was the Laughing Storm, which I may add is currently off of the restricted list. When that card came out, how many broken combos were there to go with it?
A lot.
Is it the same one that's available now? Correct? Is it Val? Am I right?
Well, it's not just
one.
Val.
The
it
same
was...
one that's out for. There was no threat from the East printed yet.
I don't know if it's just even the combo. I mean, that ability, I think, is just so to negate a challenge type. But we're going to go down a dark road. We don't need to go down.
You still win the challenge. Anyways, but what I'm saying is, let's see it at least. I get that those are shitty scenarios. But maybe in the idea and the spirit of Melee, that player will have a storm fall on them like they have never seen before, of an enraged player just fucking them in the ass for what they have done.
I mean,
okay?
Unless they
I mean,
just win the game by paying 3 gold.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take your Barrick, your Viper, your Cersei.
Loyalty can be bought, okay?
Robert,
ask
Mel.
Braun.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. Sometimes all you need is just like four or five little power, bam. And that's usually sitting on a renowned guy. It's worth a damn.
I think, you know, that's a 3-cost attachment that disintegrates at the end of dominance that you're going to hope you're going to have in your hand to take that character with five power on it.
But you hope you take them right. Like, you're not worrying about dominance.
You're winning in Marshall. We don't even see a lot of decks with characters that get that much power on them, though.
Yeah, you do.
Just won the game. Who? What, a dragon that can't take attachments?
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes Daenerys. What do you see? You don't even really see a lot of those Barret Rush decks anymore. And granted, that character has three
and
power.
And this would help cement that.
By the time this guy had 12 power, he deserved to win the damn game if he had that three-cost attachment in his hand.
I don't know. All I can say is if this doesn't, you can bet your ass I'm running Barret for some melee games.
Yeah,
I've run Barret for some melee games, and it's fun, but...
This is going to be a different kind of Barret, and it's
I think that Mel's Favor is a cool-ass card, and, you know, I'd be okay with seeing it in melee for now. Okay. I think we need to see how it's received.
Well, let's move on to the next one that I think needs to be on that melee restricted list. Now, this may not surprise some of you. It may throw Daryl for a loop because he thinks Mel's Favor is okay. I vote Cold Hands needs restricted in melee because that guy is just bonkers the way he scales out there. You know, when I'm saying Mel's Favor really hammers any decks in melee that are trying to rush with power on characters, you know, and that's a problem. It's not just because of Mel's Favor. It's an aggregate along with Cold Hands, who doesn't just screw one player there, it screws all the other players at the table who may be attempting that strategy.
And when you imagine, imagine there's a one of in each of the decks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the game would get
it
so
will
screwy.
Come up. Even if everyone only has one of the four people at the table is going to draw it for sure.
Well, and what happens when you get two characters out of play? You have to remember which ones for which Cold Hands.
Oh, yeah, good point there.
I don't like him. I think he should be restricted in both. The moment I saw that card, I just wanted to go, take a shit on it. I don't like it. I don't like what it does.
Listen to this.
We invite Kyle on in Brett's place, and he just decides to take a dump on.
I'm getting one last shot.
Right.
I gotta fuck him. Like, that's my rule.
Trust the dark side.
I gotta fuck Brett. That's my thing, right? So, this is fucking him one more time.
Do what you do.
I hate this card. I did have a solution. I was talking with Will. And I'm going to say it on the air because I'm that full of myself that my suggestion needs to be broadcast. But of this, if we just tacked on, if you're running the North agenda, Cold Hands gains blank, and you know, and then his ability, I think it would be infinitely better than its current manifestation. Infinitely better. I think it would curb it. It doesn't need to be restricted.
Infinitely balanced, maybe not better.
Better for the game. Better for the health of the game.
Right.
That's really what is at my heart here. It's not winning. It's not good cards. It's the health of the game.
Right.
But I think it's Nedley. I think it would...
Well...
I don't know. I just think it's so bad. But I love Voltron decks, and I know we're talking about terminology later, and now that I know we are, I've thought about it this whole episode... But I love them. I think they're cool. I like combos. I like Brotherhood. Power characters are neat. And Cold Hands essentially says you can't play that deck and take it to a big tournament.
Right.
Because, I mean, I understand Rock, Paper, Scissors and having bad matchups and good matchups. But this would be like Kings of Summer on Song of Ice. It's just you just look at them and shrug and say, I'm sorry, you just lost. Do you want to go get nachos? Because why play this out? I mean, it would be absolute and brutal. My Voltron Joff deck I'm building right now that I love so much, that's over. All these King Viz decks, they're over.
I can see this one of two ways. One,
the right way?
Melding melee in a way where you have to think more about just yourself. A lot of melee decks are just all about the one player. Like, hey, I'm not going to worry about protecting other players or whatever. Or defending for other players, I'm just going to worry about, hey, my deck, my guys, gaining a bunch of power, winning the game. Maybe you've got to think, I need to cancel this character ability, I need to do this, I need to do that. Maybe it's going to expand it a little bit. And then maybe it can maybe
top four.
Right, and maybe it can be the flip side. Maybe Cold Hands might be a bad idea. Well, I play Cold Hands, I get rid of this one-cost douche that I control, and then I'm going to get rid of your Cersei, your Daenerys, and your, you know, Robert, and move on with my shit.
Now
you're going to need to quit breathing into your mic.
Sorry.
It's fine. As you do it more. Anyways. Another card that I don't think needs to be restricted from just him being printed. That is a bad practice. If you can't sit there and level this card out through the playtest phase and look at it in different scenarios and think that it's okay, and then you need to sit there and print it and then restrict it from the get-go, there's a problem. There's a problem with the way you do things. I think that this has been looked at carefully by the playtest team and by FFG, and they have looked at it in these scenarios and thought of the ways, not necessarily that it can impact the game in a negative way, but produce a way in which players will think about the way they build their decks. Maybe they're sick and tired of the same plain Jane shit, where players are trying to just build decks to just win right then and there, very fast and very quickly. Hey, you're running a Sand Snakes deck? That's awesome. Let me remove your Red Viper from the game. Okay? I think this is the step that they're taking with Cold Hands. And maybe, you know, I'm no expert here, okay? But I think that this is a good idea. Will he see the restricted list? Possibly, absolutely. That's a great ability. But should he be restricted right now? There's no way.
And I think he should be in Melee, hands down. I mean, I just thinking about scenarios that just blow my mind and...
Stop putting all your power on one character. There you go.
Not even all your power. Like, you can't run...
Brotherhood sucks ass in Melee anyways. That's fine. I'll see that shit go happily.
I just don't.
Well, I got my Mad Huntsman. Blah, blah, blah. You can shit your pants. I don't care. Get out of my face.
Jeez.
That's fine. I hate the fucking Mad Huntsman. I hate him. I hate that card. Seriously. With a passion. Fucking Mad Huntsman. How often has Will fucking plugged my ass with the Mad Huntsman? I can't stand him. That's fine. I'm happy to see him go.
I don't think he's going.
I just raced so hard on the Mad Huntsman.
Yeah, that was a little intense. Holy shit.
He doesn't even do anything else but a... Wait, he is deadly though, right? I don't think he is deadly.
No, he doesn't?
Eh, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him. This is the best Worlds... This is the best Melee experience I had in a long time at Worlds. I don't know what you mean
right.
about...
It really has.
Just Rush.
It really has. You're right.
Just Rush.
And it, right. You're right. You're right. It's not just Rush. So why should Cold Hands be on there?
Because he dicks everything. And when there's
he
four
dicks
of them...
He Rush in more ways than one. He doesn't necessarily
everything.
Dick another deck.
But yeah, he fucks with everything.
He doesn't fuck with everything. If you're putting the faith of... your house in the Game of Thrones in the hands of one person, there's a problem.
Okay, not one person, but he's still, like, if you got Mel out, the one where it's like, fuck the power on your characters.
Yeah, well,
like,
fuck her. Good.
I'm done with that.
Good, she fucking sucks anyways. That's fine.
You're a Balerion? I'm done with that. Like, there's
all
kinds
of stuff. Yeah, Balerion's a fucking asshole. That's fine. He comes into play and does one thing, and then he's a big 10-cost body. Fuck that guy who gets put into play 90% of the time with that asinine dragon lord. That's fine. He can kiss my balls.
I know what Daryl's going to be playing.
Yeah, I will play Cold Hands. I will absolutely play Cold Hands. And if he makes his way on the restricted list, the day he makes his way on the restricted list, I will say, okay, I can see that now, because he will have been played in tournaments a few times before we decide to jump the gun on this shit.
I can't wait for Cold Hands shenanigans, where one person plays a Cold Hands, and someone else plays a Cold Hands, and they Cold Hands the original Cold Hands.
That's
like,
fine. Put the other guy in the play. That's not hard.
Convoluted and stupid.
If you're a dumbass, it is. Well, this guy was removed by his Cold Hands. Put him into play. Okay, done. What are you talking about?
When there are, I've been at enough Melee tables to know that someone is going to get real confused.
Well, if they're confused, they're dumber than me, and that's hard to do. Let's move on.
Had a listener or two request that we update them on some of the terminology that gets thrown around without us really thinking too much about folks not always knowing what it means. You play card games for a while, you just kind of pick this sort of language up, and you don't really think much about it past that. You just accept that everybody uses it. So I wanted to take just a couple minutes here and briefly run through a few topics here. I'm going to lead with Voltron. Daryl, what's a Voltron?
Well, there was actually this Japanese anime created. I want to say it was in the 80s, possibly the 70s.
I believe you're right.
Where there were five legendary lions that all connected to create this fantastic hero of the universe known as Voltron.
Okay, let's back up. The lions were robots.
Oh, yeah.
And they combined together into one large robot.
Think Power Rangers, but...
Okay, so yes. A Voltron deck... Now, Voltron, at its core, is, yes, from an anime of robotic lions piloted by dudes to create a powerful savior of the universe known as Voltron. Let's put this into American terms. Power Rangers had their Zords that created whatever it was called. What was the name of there? Whatever.
Megazord.
Megazord, yes.
Jesus.
Okay, so it's the same idea. A Voltron deck is a deck that has different parts, different cards that come together and create an effect that is powerful.
Usually attachments on a character.
Maybe more specifically,
it's attachments on a character. You make someone a house. I mean, that's...
Right. Sometimes it's...
You take these smaller pieces and you build one large super robot out of them.
So, Beric Dondarrion can be a part of a Voltron deck when he was in the Maester's path, when that deck was a thing. You would get a bunch of attachments, a bunch of chains on a Beric Dondarrion, and you would have, like, the copper link to turn somebody into a dragon and take control of them, and then play the prince that was promised, and different ways to stand Beric, and things like that, to get him to roll through there. So you were dealing with just Beric was the problem, but he had all these attachments on him that gave him different abilities, and these things that came together to make him very powerful. And that is what a Voltron deck is. It is a number of cards that work together to just blow your ass out of the water. And that is what we mean when we say Voltron deck.
All right, now we've got a couple more here that are related to each other. We had a little dispute about this one, or these two, rather. This is Chud and Weenie, all right? Now, Daryl and I feel that there's a difference between these terms. Kyle, I think, disagrees with us. Now, I'm going to go ahead and present our side. And the example I used earlier is that a Weenie is a low-strength, possibly a utility character that generally is there to kind of help on setup and really doesn't do hardly anything. For example, a Lannisport Moneylender does provide some gold. It's not really doing much in the challenge phase or anything other than that resource. Whereas a Chud is a non-unique character. Maybe it's okay. You know, it just kind of rounds out your curve. Maybe it fits a particular theme. But, for example, it is going to be your first choice when it really comes down to it on letting someone die for a military claim. You know, the example I used is you're running a Wildlings deck and you've got skin changers in there. They fit the theme. They're okay. They do a little bit of work. But when it comes down to it, they're going to die and you're not going to care.
Yeah, a Weenie is cost-effective. It's okay. Sometimes it might have, like, plus one gold in a Lannister deck. A Chud is a character that is okay at its cost and has okay strength. It's just kind of there. That's the difference.
I don't know. I mean, your definitions, I guess, make sense. I think that just comes across that weenies and chuds are cards you're playing for their value much more so than their abilities, or they don't make up a core of what you're trying to do.
I think that weenies you play for their value. I think that chuds you play because they fit into the theme of what you're trying to do, but they don't really do a whole lot, so you're okay with killing them off. A perfect example of a chud would be
a skin changer in a wildling deck.
A skin changer is okay, yes. But a oh my god, I forgot what her name was. Was it greedy something? Greedy counselor. Yeah, you can bring her back for 2 gold from your discard pile. She is a chud. She is all right, but she doesn't really do anything. You know, she's okay. And she might fit into the theme of your Lannister deck, but she doesn't really do anything. So you're okay with killing her in military challenges. She has no real value.
All right.
Yep.
I won't fight you.
Okay. So next up, then, we had a suggestion on stall. And I think another term on this list fits in together with that very nicely. So I'm going to lump them together. I'm going to go ahead and cover these two and then let you guys mention the next ones. This is stall, and related to that, I would say, is chump block. Stall can mean a couple different things. It can be stalling the game in the sense that you are trying to slow it down and play to time, which can be a problem in a tournament setting. Or it could also be stalling in order to slow down your opponent's victory in the hopes that something will change in the game state to let you win. Maybe you draw something, maybe you play enough plot or enough turns that you rotate around on plots and are able to use something like Valor Margolis again. It could be a variety of things.
Sure.
Chump block, I see related. Because that is when you block an incoming attack, say with a weenie or possibly a chud character, even though you know you're not going to win, just to deny them the unopposed power. So that would be a method of stalling them.
Yep.
Sound good?
Yep.
All right.
Next.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm going to throw the Jaime, Shaga, and Ned archetypes at you guys, though.
Sure.
Jaimes are much like our Kingslayer friend, and I would say they're your alpha, you're very ruthless, cutthroat, I want to win, winning is fun players. They don't necessarily have an allegiance to an archetype or a house or anything like that. It's literally about optimizing their deck and their play to give them the best chance to win.
Right, they're going to play the best deck. Bar none.
Yeah.
They don't care about themes. They don't care about whatever. They care about the interactions and the cards themselves, and they're going to win no matter what the cost.
Yeah. And they can be nice guys. Jaimes are people,
they can
too.
Be. Right. They can be very nice guys.
Jaimes are people, too.
Yeah. The next one is Shaga. I think everyone knows Shaga. A Shaga player is a player that looks at cool interactions and looks at neat effects and tries to, or even themes, I should say, and builds on that. So they're looking for just cool stuff to do that definitely sees results, but not necessarily in the way of, like, this is the most efficient way to do it. It's just like, hey, this is a really sweet way to do this and a really sweet way to abuse this. Let's just build a deck around this and rock and roll. So, I think the Maester's Path was definitely an idea, a Shaga archetype, but in the end became kind of Jaime, as it was too efficient for its own good, but had a lot of fun tools and interactions.
Jaime stole Shaga's toy for sure.
That bastard.
And certainly last but not least is the Ned player.
who is a player, if I'm not mistaken, because I am not a Ned player myself, is a player who wants to play into the theme. So he's got his Jaime Lannister and he's got his Kingsguard characters, and it's like he has this Jaime who's built up and who has his Kingsguard behind him in these interactions that work together, but in the end fulfill a theme. And the idea is having this awesome theme deck that is Nedley to the story.
They usually do have the best deck names, though, for sure.
Yeah, they do. But it is not necessarily the most competitive way to play the game, but it is most certainly, in my opinion, one of the more fun ways to play the game, by sticking to a theme, because that, in and of itself, I think, is the heart of a Game of Thrones.
Says the man who's never read the books.
Yeah.
And never built a Ned deck to save his life. And probably never will.
Oh, man.
I'm a hypocrite. Deal with it.
So what else do we have here that gets bandied about? Let's see. How about OP? Or overpowered, you might say.
Well, it's just cards that you'll find when you go to the forums casually being bitched about. Those are usually your overpowered cards.
Yeah, I think that overpowered, or when we say OP, means a card that its effect outweighs its cost, or it's too efficient. There's definitely a such thing as being too efficient. And I think that one of the cards that teeters time and time again on the brink of being OP is Orphan of the Greenblood. It is zero cost. Sure, it's zero strength. Back in the CCG, it was one strength. It has no icons, but its ability to be played at setup and to be discarded at any time to take an icon can be a fantastic advantage. So whenever we say a card is OP, it is because its cost does not outweigh its effect. And it can be proven to be too good for what it does.
Okay. So, related then, what would be broken?
A super OP card. Beyond OP.
Yeah.
When we wonder why it's not restricted on both lists and was even made in the first place.
Right. A broken
Many
card...
Many things get called broken, but...
Right, and we'll joke about a card being broken, and it might just be OP, or it might just be really good and fun, but a truly broken card, and we're like, man, that is fucking broken. It is because that card, for one thing, is undercosted in whatever it is, but also the effect is so powerful that it doesn't make sense in the game. It doesn't make sense why the card was printed. It doesn't make sense of what it does. Very few times do we say a card is truly broken. We might joke about it, but very few times is a card truly broken. And sometimes a card will be broken because it does not work as intended. It is actually a mess up in the grammar of the way the card was written, and thus creates an effect that is ridiculous. Like,
I think is a good point.
Right, whenever Threat from the East was first being abused, I think it was broken, literally. It did not work as its text had it previously intended it to work. Thus, you would have games start where a player had one card in his hand. That is broken. That is not intended, and it is completely defunct as the way the game should be played.
Yeah, it's funny, like I was going to mention, cards end up being broken, very rarely are received as such. I mean, I try to think of cards people are like, holy cow, I cannot believe that ever even existed or worked that way. And when they came out, they were not necessarily received in such a fashion. I mean, I remember Pentashi, when that pack came out, it got booed to the ground. Everyone's like, this sucks, giving them a power, blah, 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 blah. And now look at it. I mean, I'm not saying it's broken, but I'm just saying it's interesting. Very rarely does a card come out and you're like, this is going to rock the game, and it ends up being as such.
Then just a couple more to round out our non-exhaustive list here. I'll take the next one. That is going to be Burn. That one, as Daryl mentioned earlier when we were chatting, originates with probably with Magic the Gathering, with red decks, where everything is fairly fire-themed. So effects that actually dealt damage to characters or players were burn effects. In Game of Thrones, it kind of started out being themed as actual dragon fire, but not all of them have really stayed that way. Regardless, any of those effects in Targaryen and potentially other houses that give a character minus strength and, say, kill or discard them afterward are burn effects.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that any deck or any card that is taking strength away on a consistent basis and on a regular basis through its card effects, I consider burn. So not just a Targaryen deck, sometime, you know, in the right deck, a Sala's Escort ship can be considered burn, because it is taking strength away from your character, and at times there can be other cards that will add a terminal effect to that character that it's on, thus creating a burn effect.
Yep, like Shaggy Dog, Direwolf burn. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, deteriorating your character's strength and then putting them in a position to be discarded or killed.
True thing. All right, I think the last one we're going to hit on is rules, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I think that could be a verb or a noun. Who wants to take the verb?
I prefer the noun because I'm a hater.
Okay. I'll take the verb then. You can rules lawyer someone. For instance, this one happened to Justin Fox, a friend of ours, who was playing a Baratheon deck in the top four of Worlds a few years back and was using the Baratheon Bannerman, the Banner for the Storm. Unfortunately, Justin made a mistake here and didn't realize that he'd played the response after the point where characters would already stand for Vigilant. So he played the character, then tried to stand, it may have been Robert Baratheon, for Vigilant, and his opponent was like, you can't do that. That is rules lawyering someone.
Right. And in, well, as I think of it, is Vigilant a May? And that is why?
Yeah.
That's
they're all Mays besides Stalwart.
Right. Okay. Right. And a rules lawyer, in the form of a noun, would be an asshole, who I have been before, in two ways. One, he can be an asshole if it's in casual play, because, dude, you're an asshole. In tournament play, you're just being a tournament player, which is fine. But this is going to be a player who, on a consistent basis, takes the rules very seriously. If you forget to trigger something that you had a response for, like you lost a challenge and you forget to do it, and it's midway through another challenge and you're like, oh man, I forgot to do this. Is it okay if I do this? That person's like, no, you missed that. And in casual play, there can be instances where it really isn't that big of a deal. That's fine, man. You can go ahead and trigger that. In tournament play, that's a completely different thing, and you are never in the wrong in being a rules lawyer, but this is someone who knows the rules of the game through and through, or at least has a good knowledge of it, and they are going to keep you to it and enforce them regularly.
My favorite, and I'll tell this because he's on the podcast, my favorite rules lawyer moment, it was kind of a welcome to Competitive Thrones. I'm playing Will for the Missouri State Championship, and the only thing he has on the board is Barrack, a Voltron Barrack. It's loaded up with stuff, and there are no other characters on the board, and I played an enemy informer, and I think I even, like, pointed at it and, like, flicked, or I motioned, but I did not say, I now trigger the enemy informer to kneel your barrack. And I, like, spaced out for a second. I was thinking about what I was going to do next, and I looked up, and Will's like, challenges? I'm like, yeah. And I didn't even, like, look at the board. And then he goes, all right, I do a military with barrack. And I go, how is he still up? And he's like, well, you didn't technically say that you trigger the informer to kneel barrack.
Asshole.
It,
whoa. This was a tournament game.
It was four state title. Like I am
not obligated to assume you triggered anything.
I know. I don't.
Good Lord.
I don't fault you for it, but it was a state. And I had been a super bad casual player. It was my first time making a top cut. I'd never been in that kind of environment, and it was just a welcome to Thrones, asshole kind of moment. But I always remember people are like, man, when you get to that top cut, people just get real dickish on the rules. That is the moment I go to is that. And I go, yep, yes, they do. So thank you, Will, for breaking my ass in. It was not appreciated.
And in competitive play, players will get caught up in the moment and they will miss those things. And it's your job to remember the rules. Every competitive player in a tournament setting should be a rules lawyer, and you should know exactly what the rules are, because players will forget things, and it is not your job to remind them, at least if they are responses and triggered effects. If they are passives, well, that's
right.
That's a question of integrity, really.
Passives are on both players, but past that, it's not on it's never on me or
exactly,
you know, you as it is to play the other person's game for them, and that's when you get into any sort of triggered stuff. If they don't, you know, declare that they're doing X, Y, or Z, then they're not doing X, Y, or Z.
Exactly. Prime example, this year at Worlds, I played Burning Bridges, which attachments, character abilities, location abilities can't be triggered. Like, they don't do anything. My opponent brings an Alchemist Apprentice, is that what it's called? Pyromancer's Apprentice, I'm sorry, out of Shadows, and he's like, well, I blow this up, and I point to my plot, and I say, that doesn't happen. He says, do you mind if I take that back? I didn't know, and I go, absolutely not. That's the reason I played this plot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It makes you a dick, but don't forget that you're in a competitive setting. That didn't mean I didn't like the guy, and I didn't think that was okay, you know, he was a cool guy or whatever. It just means I was... That's the reason I played that plot, and those are the rules of the game, and he brought his character out. That's not my problem. Don't have a problem doing that in a competitive setting. If you're playing with your friends, you know, have a little leeway. If you
the point
attention.
Is to get better. He won't make that mistake again.
Exactly. So, I mean, either way. So now you know some of our lingo. If you are... you know, curious about some of the other lingo, send us a message or whatever on what you want us to elaborate on, and we will do so.
Props and slops?
I have a prop.
What's that?
Currently, I am reading American Gods by Neil Gaiman, and so far it's a really good book. My New Year's resolution, although I wasn't going to have one because everyone's talking about how dumb they are, I decided that, hey, I'm going to be dumb and I'm going to have one. I'm going to try to read one book every 2 weeks, which is, what, like roughly like 25 books a year? Something like that. So I'm going to try to read about 25 books this year, give or take. And so far it is a fantastic book. I know that Neil Gaiman is considered a great writer and all that jazz. What I didn't notice when I bought the book was that it was, give or take, an extended edition, quote unquote. It is the author's preferred version. So it's a little longer and possibly a little more drawn out than the original version. But I just bought it because... it was a bigger version and it, you know, easier to read per se. But so far it's a really good book, and I'm looking forward to reading more of his stuff because I haven't.
Nice.
Yep. Kyle, what do you got?
For slops, I will say that when I moved to sunny Iowa, it was for the tropical climate, and having experienced what Siberia must feel like in November has been atrocious and absolutely horrible. Mm-hmm. So that's a slop. I don't like to end on a sour note, so my prop will be to Ryan Jones and his lovely family for their holiday Facebook Christmas card with him and his little Santa hat and his dogs, and it was adorable. So, Ryan, if you were out there, way to go on the photo stuff.
You didn't send me a Christmas card, Ryan Jones.
It was on Facebook, dude. You just gotta go to his page. It's right there.
Well, I guess I missed that.
It's not very personal.
I was like, aw. And he's got his dogs with him. And I'm like, kudos on including the dogs, because anything that, you know, is willing to pee in front of you is family. At least that's my bar. I feel like Daryl's judging me right now. This is getting weird.
Yeah, I'm judging right. you a little bit.
All right, I'm just going to back off. Will, do you got something? Anything?
Actually, I have a reading-related tidbit. I recently started reading my way through Grant Morrison's The Invisibles comic book from the mid through late 90s. And it's been pretty good. I just finished volume 2 tonight and am a couple issues into volume 3. And before this, I would have said it was really good. Morrison's one of those, shall we say, esoteric writers, kind of known for his weirder Vertigo type stuff. And this is definitely one of those. And when it started, like all the way through volume 1, aside from maybe like one issue, was kind of this wild ride. Like, you could feel that there was this trippy stuff going on, and like secret conspiracies and supernatural stuff, like that was just barely out of reach. Like, and it felt like it was all going to make sense eventually, right? No matter how wild it was. It's kind of losing that. And I would definitely say, in Morrison's recent stuff in real time, he's kind of become incoherent in his writing. And since I'm sitting down and reading The Invisibles, like, in large chunks and reading years worth of comics, it's kind of weird to see him become kind of incoherent as it goes. Now, I just started Volume 3. Hopefully, by the time I wrap it up, it makes enough sense. But it is actually making less sense as it goes, which seems like a problem. So, I don't know. It's more for the comic fiends in the audience there. Hopefully, someone else out there knows what I'm talking about when I mention Grant Morrison.
I'm sure they do, Will.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have one more prop. I've been playing a game that I got on Steam a little bit ago. It's called Risk of Rain. It is like a survival action RPG kind of game. It's really fun. It's only $10. It's made by Chucklefish, same guys that made Starbound. It's a blast. I've been playing it with some buddies, and you should check it out if you are into computer gaming and into, like, 8-bit indie games. So it's called Risk of Rain. Check it out.
Cool.
I guess I have one other I was reading today. Razer today came out with a computer, and this was like college was worth something to me, with a computer that's modular and it's completely cooled by mineral oil.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the way that works for people who don't like follow that kind of stuff is mineral oil is completely non-conducting. So you can literally submerge the whole damn thing in it and nothing will fry, which is really cool and handy.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I did this in college as part of a chemistry project, And everyone's kind of like, this is lame, and kind of neat, because I put it in a fish tank, so it looked like, you know, like it was a fish tank with a computer in it, with rocks and plants, and it was cool. And I was like, this is neat, but I don't see where this would ever go anywhere. And I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world, so to see something like that hit the market, I mean, obviously I don't feel like vindicated, like, see, but, you know, it was just kind of neat to, you know, see that idea be implemented in a professional way. So I think it's really cool. Go check it out. It's kind of neat. It's a way to break into computers if you're like, I want to learn more about this and upgrade stuff, but I don't really know what to do and how to crack that open. So go check it out.
Yeah, I got to second that. It's really cool. I was actually just reading an issue of Maximum PC recently where they built a fish tank computer like that with mineral oil. And until I read that, I had no idea that it was non-conductive. And I first read that, and I was like, no freaking way. You can do that? That's just awesome.
And it's really good. I mean, the project, for any computer builders out there, you should really look into it. It's neat. They make fun little rigs, and they're conversation pieces. The most expensive part's going to be buying the oil, because to fill up a decent-sized fish tank is going to be like $40. But even in the lane of like PC components, that's really not, you know, that much cash. So, you know, it's something to look at. If you haven't heard about it, I mean, it's starting to gain some steam, but check it out.
All right, well, thank you for listening to the first episode of 2014, and we hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, any suggestions, you can email us at twochampsandachump@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twochampsonechump@twitter.com, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You can like our Facebook page. We need plenty of likes. So tell your friends, tell your grandma, tell that.
We're up to 450 right
around
now.
Around there, yep.
And they recently added a new feature where you can watch other pages and kind of judge yourself by how well they're doing. Yeah, kind of creepy, I know.
That's weird.
But, so I started following the Cardboard of the Rings page. Come on, guys. They're a Lord of the Rings LCG podcast. Surely we can get more Facebook fans from that than them, and they have 800 some odd.
Jeez,
right now.
Jeez, we are just uncool. What the hey?
So, come on, guys. Help us beat Cardboard of the Rings
exactly
in this somewhat friendly competition.
I mean, come on, we've been doing this for years. Come on! It's all good. We don't care either way, but seriously, we like to hear from you. That's why we do this. We have a blast talking to each other, but we do enjoy talking to you, so hit us up, and we might respond to you. More often than not, we'll respond to you. We don't have anything better to do.
Well, speaking of talking to us, keep your calendars open, listeners, for February 11th. We will announce more details as we get closer there. But we've been kicking around the idea for a, so to speak, live episode at some point through Google Hangouts. And so we are currently jotting that down for February 11th. We wanted to give you some lead time.
Correct. We are thinking Google Hangouts or Twitch or something like that. Let us know what you think is best. But we are planning a live style of podcast where we're going to record an episode, but we're also going to have some community feedback live during that episode, and you will be able to hear the raw, uncut version of 2C1C that could possibly last a few hours. We'll see. So it just depends on how the community takes it. So right now, February 11th is going to be the date, so be ready. We're going to have some fun with it.
Danger Zone! Ghost.